This is the Military Bottom Line Podcast, episode 87.
If you go in and you're like, hey, I want those 20 bulldozers, mm-hmm. they're going to go, why do you need 20 bulldozers?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
How about we give you one? Uh-huh. And then they give you the one bulldozer, and the next month you're like, hey, I want another bulldozer. They're like, we just gave you a bulldozer. We're going to give it to the other guy who hasn't had one yet. So it's not just a complete free-for-all.
Welcome to the Military Bottom Line Podcast, where we learn from veterans and those currently serving how to make the most out of a military contract. We're here to motivate, inspire, and help you leverage your service to positively impact you professionally, personally, and financially during your military career and beyond. What's going on, everybody? I am super excited to introduce you to my guest, Bill Fulton. Bill is an 8-year Army infantry veteran, an author, and a prior undercover FBI informant. We got really into a lot of interesting things today, but the main reason that Bill and I connected was because of his familiarity with veteran-certified owned businesses and how veterans can become certified business owners and benefit from government surplus equipment, where they can get all types of equipment for free. So I really hope you guys enjoy this episode with Bill. Stick around and figure out how, if you are a small business owner, you can get yourself become a veteran certified owned business and benefit from this type of stuff. Hope you guys enjoy. What's going on, Bill? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good, good. It's funny. I was about to say good morning, but I'm like, I don't even know what time zone you're in. So I maybe shouldn't
assume. I'm in the Eastern time zone, so it's early afternoon.
Perfect. Me too. I guess I would have said good morning incorrectly.
It's the weekend. So, you know, the morning lasts till like 3 p.m.
This is true. This is true. Pleasure to meet you in person. We briefly connected. We were commenting on some similar posts on Instagram, and you made a comment about veteran-owned certified businesses and some benefits affiliated with those kind of things. And so I was like, man, I should chat with this guy. And then I dug a little deeper, and you're into all kinds of things. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
I try to stay busy.
It's a good place to be. Well, let's start with just a little bit of background on yourself and who you are, why you joined the military in the first place, when did you join, what'd you do, and where you're from kind of thing.
Grew up on a horse and cattle ranch in Montana. Had to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
So joined the Army. Got great ASVAB scores. The recruiter told me that there was this wonderful job called the infantry. Mm-hmm. Where you didn't have to have such a good ASVAB score, but you got to jump out of airplanes and shoot at people. And at 17, that was the route, unfortunately. So I spent 8 years in the infantry.
8 years. What year was this? I don't want to age yourself.
Oh, I got out in 2000. So okay. 92,
12, 18 to 12, 18, 2000. Okay. And any good particular times. Reason it was the Army for you, or it was just kind of like,
family time. Like the whole family's always been in the Army, so I went in the Army.
Gotcha.
That's just kind of I guess it's, we do generational military service now, so
okay, all right, right on. Were you pursuing anything other than just like getting out of your, you know, current home in Montana?
For me, like, I decided I was going into the military. You know, my grandpa was a full bird. I decided I was going into the military when I was like 8.
Gotcha.
Okay. So like 10 days after my 17th birthday, I was on a plane to Fort Benning, Georgia.
Got it. Okay. So you had made up your mind. You were looking for the experience. You were looking for the military life. I like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
So knees, back, and ankles. Go figure.
Yeah.
Being in the infantry.
Uh-huh.
Nobody tells you these things. Might be rough on you.
Yeah.
So medically discharged in 2000. Did some contracting after that, because, 2001, and there was a lot of work.
Okay.
Came back from doing that, got involved, built my own company, selling, like, outdoor gear, military surplus, doing security.
Okay.
Pretty much hanging out with my friends and brewing beer, getting paid for it.
All right.
So did that until I ended up working with the FBI for 10 years. And I was working counter right-wing domestic terrorism with them undercover and as an analyst. and retired from that. And now I like consult about organic agriculture and run a sustainable holistic farm in New England.
No kidding.
I mean, you know, everybody's after the Army story.
Sure. Well, I don't know if there's a, I don't know if there's a one size fits all veteran story at this point, you know,
but I do work on a lot of, you know, veterans issues and legislative issues and stuff, because I have had the opportunity to kind of get the ear of some of the politicians sometimes, depending on what I'm involved in. And I'm an author, so I write books, so I get interviewed all the time.
Cool.
So I have spent a lot of time on specifically veterans legislation issues.
Got it. Okay. I'm looking forward to getting into that. Before we get too ahead of ourselves, I'm curious, you know, a medical discharge, you know, at eight years, you're kind of like starting the path of career military. That kind of leads to my question of like, what was that like for you? I don't know, identity wise, you know, all of a sudden
it was the most traumatic experience of my life, because I had literally wanted to be a soldier since I was like 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And tried everything. I mean, I went to Fort Sam, stood for the board, literally begged my case to stay in. Mm-hmm. I was like, you can reclassify me as anything. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, you have no discs in your back left. You have to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was rough. And that was the time that the VA was still handing out narcotics like they were candy.
Yeah.
We will give you enough drugs to where you stop calling. Mm. So within 3 months of my discharge, they have me on methadone.
Wow.
Yeah, just 90 days supply of methadone. Here you go. Have a good day.
No kidding.
And I was sitting on my couch. You know, between like going and contracting, I'd come home and sit on the couch and play video games. I was on my couch playing video games one day, drooling on myself, and my wife came in and was like, look, I love you, but I can't live like this. Mm. So it's either the meds or me. And I threw the meds away and never touched them again.
No kidding. You were able to go cold turkey.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that sucked.
Yeah. No kidding.
But in the end, it was way better for me. And then, you know, a few years down the line, as we got into the global war on terror and everything, people figured out what the VA was doing, and that kind of stopped. And now if you're in pain, you can't get anything for it. So it's the exact opposite. Yay, yeah. Go VA.
So I'm curious, how long would you say your transition out of the military took you? If you were to put a time frame on it.
So I stopped working counter right wing after January 6th, 22 years or so.
Okay. That's well, I really appreciate that answer, because I think so many people, myself included, when I was leaving, I was like, all right, cool. Military transition, you know, it's like a couple of months, maybe, you know, you just like start the new thing. And it doesn't work like that.
That whole thing's a joke.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm realizing, like, I left active duty in 2015, and then stayed in the reserves for a little bit and left again in 2021. And just really kind of realizing, like, I'm still transitioning, you know? And I'm like, it's been 8 years plus, you know, since I've been a civilian.
As long as you're out of the grunt style and 5'11 phase, we're good.
Yeah. Fair.
You got to get out of that phase first.
Dressed like a civilian. Got it.
Yeah. Once you get out of the, I'm going to wear grunt style t-shirts and 5'11s all day.
Yeah.
We can start to talk.
Okay.
But for me, I think it was that I wasn't done. Mm. And it's a very different experience when it's not your choice.
Totally.
Because, you know, I spent the next 8 years kind of building a mini version of my squad in my company that I owned. And then I spent the next 12 years doing really stupid, dangerous stuff for the government because I felt that I had to.
Interesting.
And, you know, it took a while, but I eventually just became comfortable with being me without having to be something larger than myself.
Yeah.
And that's what the addictive part of the military is. It's that you are something so much larger than yourself and that you have these people that depend on you.
Yeah.
That's the addictive part. And when you leave, it's gone.
Mm.
It's not only that you don't have that anymore. It's that, you know, with the way that military service works now, it's not like in World War II where we had, you know, everybody and their brother was in the military. So anybody you talked to understood.
Yeah.
Now, 90% of the people we talk to have no understanding of what we did, have no understanding of what it meant to us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one to even bounce that shit off of.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I mean, that's the way I look at it, but what do I know?
When you say you felt like you had to do the dangerous stuff for the government, is that because you didn't get to, like, did you not get everything you hoped to out of your 8 years? Like, you didn't get certain experiences, so you felt like you had to continue?
I just felt like I had decided to dedicate my life to that and that I owed it my life.
Mm.
And, you know, in the end, there's a point where you go, you know what, I deserve to live outside of this.
Mm.
I don't have to make this my whole existence. This doesn't, you know, government service doesn't have to be my whole life.
Yeah. 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 Well said.
I can do 22 years and call it good.
Which that, you know, that is a lifetime really for some, but that's a good point. So then you were, you know, you did some contracting and then you came back, and how did, you know, maybe it's a typical path, going from military to contracting to FBI. How did that come about?
Well, I didn't. I worked with the FBI. I never became an FBI agent.
Okay.
So the company that I was working for, the company that I built, our security company that sold outdoor equipment, and military stuff, and did security and all that. Mm-hmm. We did fugitive recovery too, like Dog the Bounty Hunter shit. It was hilarious. Okay. Yeah, it was good times. You should read my first book. It's awesome.
What's the first book called?
That's my biography. That's The Blood of Patriots.
The Blood of Patriots.
It's about the first case I worked with the FBI.
Interesting. Okay.
So, no, we had an idiot come into the shop one day that, like, wanted C4 so he could blow up a recruiting station.
Cool.
Like, the whole company's bets.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm like, I should probably call somebody because this dude's not okay.
Like, he was like straight up on. He came into the store and said these things.
He'd been a customer for like a year or two.
And okay.
One time he was just like, hey, I need some armor plates. And do you guys know where I can get some explosives? And I'm like, yeah. What are you going to use them for, dude? And he was like, oh, well, you know, government, da 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 da. And, you know, if you run a military surplus store, you hear the government's out to get you every day line.
No kidding. Yeah.
So, you know, eventually he got around to, like, you know, it was the recruiting stations where he wanted to make his point.
Mm.
I'm just thinking to myself, dude, you're saying this in a room full of vets. Like,
yeah.
You've got to be the dumbest son of a bitch on the planet. So I called the, I called CID.
Mm-hmm.
And CID's like, no, that's FBI. I'm like, I really don't want to get involved with them.
Yeah. And they're like, you're looking to just like really tell somebody and let them do the rest, right?
Yeah. So call the FBI. They're like, yeah, that's interesting. By the way, do you know this guy? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's one of my great customers. Oh, do you know this guy? Oh, yeah, he was in last week. And they just started going down this list. And I fucking finally realized that they, like, if I had a customer loyalty program, those would be the guys with all the points.
Interesting. Okay.
So
were you then like, wait a second, are you guys must be watching me too? Like, am I on your list just because I own this store?
Yeah, probably. I probably was.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wasn't, there was a problem.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, ended up working a big case with them, putting a bunch of guys in prison, got relocated. Once you get relocated, it's not like you can just go get a normal job.
Mm.
So, you know,
so you got relocated
as a contract analyst and doing more undercover work for them for the next 10 years.
So you got relocated because all of a sudden all your customers were ending up in prison?
Well, they wanted to kill me because, you know, like if you sell somebody a rocket launcher and then they go to prison for buying a rocket launcher, their friends may or may not want to end your existence. It's kind of a thing.
Got it. Got it.
But there was a point in time where if you saw, you know, this guy got busted for buying a rocket launcher, there's a chance that came out of the trunk of my rental car.
Interesting. I didn't know you could buy rocket launchers.
You can't, which is why they go to prison.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Got it.
I will sell you one, but you're very quickly heading to prison, sir.
Got it. Interesting. So
yeah, so I did that for a few years, and you know, now I talk about organic gardening.
Did you have immunity to sell these rocket launchers? Like, how does that work?
It's called there's this thing called otherwise illegal activity, OIA.
Uh huh.
And so if you're working for the federal government, you get a little certificate from the U.S. Attorney's Office that says you are allowed to do these illegal actions in pursuit of whatever this is.
Huh.
So like if an undercover cop goes in and has to do a line of cocaine.
Got it.
In a drug deal, it's called otherwise illegal activity because, you know, possession of cocaine, doing cocaine.
That seems a little different.
No,
I'm not a legal professional. I just, you know, this is nor where I want to take this whole thing.
But yeah.
Isn't there at some point it seems like entrapment, isn't it?
So it's the same thing. If somebody calls you up and says, hey, I need a kilo of heroin.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're a cop and you bring them the kilo of heroin.
Yeah.
Is that entrapment?
I mean, if you did it for the purpose of arresting them, I don't know.
If you're a cop, that's, you know, if you're working undercover. So if somebody calls you up and says, hey, I need a brick of C4.
Yeah.
You're the guy to go to for C4.
Uh-huh.
Because you've made yourself the guy to go to.
Huh.
Then I don't think it's entrapment. It's not like I was advertising on the internet C4 for sale.
Interesting. So basically so the government provides it to you so that you could sell it to him and arrest him instead of him going to somebody else and you losing it. Like he gets it from somewhere else. So then who knows? The other guy's not going
to. I would much rather that the guy that wants to blow up the daycare buy his C4 from me and we bust him with the fake C4 than him buy real C4 from someone else.
Interesting.
But it's not like we're going out and looking for the asshole.
Yeah. 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 Interesting.
Huh. And I think that's the difference, you know, and it's something that we have to be cognizant of doing that type of work is that you don't entrap these people.
Yeah.
That you allow them those outs and that you allow them to make their own decisions.
Gotcha.
But trust me, the FBI or law enforcement is not going to come looking for you just for shits and giggles.
Got it.
They have better things to do on a Tuesday than to try to set you up.
Fair enough.
But if you're going to be an asshole and go out there and try to buy automatic weapons and shit, you're going to attract attention.
Yeah.
And we would much rather we give them to you than the asshole that's going to give you real ones.
Fair. Interesting. A whole sector of law enforcement I never even considered. So
it was fun.
Yeah. Interesting. So you did that for a number of years then?
I did that up until January 6th, you know, working counter right wing. Okay. And then I was just kind of like, I give up. I'm out.
Got it. Interesting.
You guys, you jumped the shark.
Yep.
Yep. You skipped over the Rubicon.
All right. Should we leave it at that or do you have anything more to say about it?
No, I mean, that's about it, man. Okay. I think January 6th was a turning point for a lot of folks and a lot of different things. And for me, it was just like, I'm not making a difference.
Gotcha. Interesting. No kidding.
I will go worry about climate change in my farm. Thank you.
Fair enough. So then you pivoted, started. Is it your own business? Like you stayed kind of your own boss and.
I mean, I've always, ever since I got out of the Army, I've never worked for anybody else. It just doesn't work out for me.
Fair.
Yeah. I have ADHD on top of being in the infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. So you're your own man.
I kind of have a zero dumb shit thing.
Yeah.
where if it's dumb shit, I'm not doing it. Fair. And I will tell you that, which didn't always work so well with the feds. But since I didn't work for them, I worked with them. They couldn't really tell me that I couldn't do it.
Got it. Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah.
So where in your history of, you know, self-employment and entrepreneurship, did you get involved in this legislation, which made you and I connect?
I was involved in the PAC Act too, and I've lobbied on quite a few veterans bills for, you know, Vote Vets and Hill Vets and Common Defense, and so I wrote my first book, and it got like real good critical acclaim. Disney FX bought the rights to it. All sorts of crazy shit happened. And I started going to all these award shows, and these politicians were there, and they would ask you questions like, what's it like to be a vet? And it would be, it sucks because the politicians won't give us any fucking money. And then they would be like, oh, well, here's my card. You should talk to da-da-da staff member. And I would be like, I will.
Okay. Most people would say, you know, screw you. I'm not interested. But
yeah.
Because that's getting
and
a lot.
So like Hill Vets is a program that takes veterans. I don't know if you know about Hill Vets.
Semi-familiar, but feel free to tell us.
But they take veterans and they put them into jobs in, you know, Congress, essentially.
Yep.
And the executive and the legislative branches in D.C. And they give them this political experience. And it's a really good program. But because I got voted one of the Hill Vets 100 most influential veterans.
Congratulations. Yeah,
it's interesting. So that got me in with a bunch of veterans that were literally aides and working in the trenches of legislation in D.C. Okay. These were guys that are working for the senators and the House members, and like they're right there. Mm. So all of the veteran issues these guys knew about. And I would go in and advocate where I could. I wasn't getting paid for it by any means, but, you know, I feel like I helped.
Yeah.
As much as you can without paying them off. I mean, it is DC.
Fair. Okay.
You can shame them or pay them, but paying works a lot better than shame.
Oh, man. All right. So you got some exposure from the politicians, the aides, and you were working on some legislation. And so did you, and you kind of went to them with, hey, here are the problems that I experience as a veteran with the VA. Here are problems that my friends are experiencing.
Yeah. And then we were looking at, you know, different stuff that was coming down the pipe. So the PAC Act or the Veteran Small Business Enhancement Act, which is what we kind of got together on. So all those things, you know, when something would be coming down the pipe and I would be like, okay, this will make a difference. So that's where I'm going to focus my time. Mm. If I'm going to be in D.C. for a book signing, or I'm going to be there for a gala to get an award or something, I'm going to spend a few extra days and I'm going to go up to the Capitol and knock on doors and talk to senators' aides, because talking to the senators does nothing.
Got it.
They don't do any work anyways.
Okay.
So you talk to their aides. That's who you talk to. And then, you know, eventually you might talk to a senator just to say hi and, oh, yeah, I'm working on this veterans issue. Mm-hmm. But everything's done through their aides. All the legislation's written through their aides. Anything that hits their desk goes through their aides. So you don't really talk to the senators because they don't really fucking do anything.
Got it. Interesting. So this is like when Nancy's like, oh, we got to read it to figure out what's in it. It's because they didn't write it. The aides wrote it. But the aides aren't.
And they're not
officials.
Reading it anyways. Their aides are reading it and giving them a Cliff Notes version.
Got it. And the aides are not elected, and they're the ones putting this stuff together?
Oh, absolutely. And half the time, they're getting it directly from the lobbyists.
Mm. Got it.
So you wonder why the farm bill looks the way it does? It's because the big agro companies wrote the legislation, gave it to the aides gave it to the congressman, and the congressman marked it up as a bill.
Interesting.
It's an interesting system we got.
How was that experience? I mean, I
don't know if you've noticed, but I might be jaded.
No, I did not notice. I imagine that experience would be pretty discouraging.
It is. And I mean, you get small victories, but like even with the Veterans Small Business Enhancement Act,
yeah,
like nobody knows about it.
And here we are. Because I was going to ask you, like, I got one little snip in a comment, and I was like, wait a second, because I just became a small business owner. And so I'm like, and I've heard that, you know, becoming a certified veteran-owned business is like a big pain in the nuts.
Oh, it's so.
But is it worth it?
What happens is the good idea fairy comes down and does unfunded ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Veteran Small Business Enhancement Act was. We got them to authorize free government surplus for veteran-owned small businesses, but we didn't give them any money to do it with.
Okay.
So, like we said, it's the VA's job to certify these businesses. Now, what my idea was that you would just have a business license and a DD-214, and away you go.
Seems easy enough.
But the VA doesn't have a process to give you a certificate for something that easy. But they do have the process in place if you want to sell shit to the VA to become a VA-certified veteran-owned small business. And that's so essentially the process that they use to certify you became the same process you would use to become a contractor for the VA.
Which excludes a lot of...
Becoming a government contractor is not a fun time.
I'm sure of that. But it also excludes a lot of small businesses. Because not every small business has the VA as a potential client.
Oh, no. And that's the messed up part of it. So I'm a farm, right? Mm-hmm. When I initially went through and got certified, it was useless because my state wasn't certified yet to even do the program. So I did it all for nothing.
Okay.
But I had to call them up as a farm and go, no, I'm not doing business with you. I just need this certification. Mm. Well, then why are you going through the process? Because I have to. Oh, well, you don't need to. No, I do. So it wasn't just me having to go through this bureaucratic process from hell. Mm-hmm. It was me having to explain to each bureaucrat within the bureaucratic process why I had to go through their bureaucratic process.
Got it.
So it took me about 60 to 90 days. Now you can do it in about 30 days. But it took me about 60 to 90 days to get certified.
That's far less than I thought it would be, actually.
Yeah. Well, once you get certified, then you have to go through your state federal surplus property program. Okay. And like I said, when I did it, my state didn't even have the training yet to be able to do it. So they were like, oh, get with us in another 2 years.
Okay. And were you able to do anything to expedite your state's enrollment?
I called and threatened and tried, but it didn't work out.
Where do you find if your state is already enrolled?
So you have to, there's only two or three that aren't enrolled as of now. I think the rest of them aren't. Okay. So I think you're pretty good. And the ones that aren't, I think will be within the next 3 or 4 months. So
when did this legislation go into effect?
Oh, 2020, 2021.
All right, so semi-recent.
It's been there for a minute.
Okay. All right.
I think the bill was actually 2018. I'd have to go back and check because ADHD and time and me and no.
Yeah.
But it's so you contact your state surplus property program. They'll give you a logon for a website called GovX, which is the GSA's government surplus website. And you go in and you pick out what you want. And if, you know, they decide that your state surplus property and the federal surplus property program is like, well, two people want this, but this dude wants it for a better reason, then you get the equipment. That's it.
So you get a GovX account and you look through what you want. Is this like Amazon? I mean, at this point, you're looking through.
It's just like, literally like eBay, but for free government shit.
And so is it quality government stuff, or is it just like, hey, we found this computer in the back of a Connex box?
No. So I was on there a few months ago, and there was like 20 brand new combat bulldozers. Like the up armored ones that the CBs use.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There was like 20 of them. And you just rotating out war stocks.
You can have them
free. you got to pay transportation or go pick it up yourself, but it's free. Now, your state might charge you a nominal fee for doing the paperwork.
Okay.
But there's like, and it's not just military surplus. It's all government surplus. So
you could fully like fit up an office. You could fully fit up.
Well, not even an office. Like you can get prefabbed houses in 40-foot Connexes. You can get a Connex full of solar panels.
What?
You can get a giant timber harvesting freaking tracked giant vehicle from the Forest Service.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
So
you can't get like airframes and like aircraft carriers that you're not allowed.
Sure. I mean, obviously there has to, you're not getting tanks, I assume, or like.
No, you can get tanks.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Unbelievable. Okay. Can you get firearms?
Most of the tanks are slated to be demilled, so you have to cut them up and sell them for scrap, but you can get them.
Interesting. I assume you can't get firearms?
No.
Okay. But vehicles, gym equipment, computers, office materials and equipment.
Offices.
Connexes,
dozers, shipping containers, logging equipment, chainsaws, firefighting equipment.
You could start a whole construction business funded by this GovX surplus stuff.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Have you successfully obtained any surplus equipment?
So I let my certification lapse before we got certified, but I have helped like multiple people successfully get equipment.
Okay. How long was their timeline? Like how long did they have to
go through? For some, it took like 2 weeks from the time they picked it out to where they picked it up. For others, it was like a month and a half, depending on the site and the equipment. There are so you have to have it in service within 6 months. Let's say that you get an excavator, right? You have to put that excavator to work.
Got it.
Within 6 months of getting it from the government, or you have to give it back.
Gotcha.
If it needs repairs and they were repairs that were disclosed, you know, on the listing, then you have to do those repairs and get it into service. You understood that when you picked it up. Mm. After 18 months, you own it.
No matter what it is, that's the timeline.
Free and clear. After 18 months, you may dispose of it any way you choose.
You could sell it. Okay. So you get some, you could get something, use it for a year, you know, 18 months.
Year and a half.
Yeah. And then you could not use it anymore. You could sell it. You could throw it away. You could do anything with it.
You could bury it in a hole. Doesn't matter what you do. It's yours.
And then you can go get a new one, or you know, a newish one from.
Or you could get like five of them.
Okay, all right. Do they have?
You're gonna need spare parts, right?
Yes, true. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, but you also have to make.
They will look at it like if you go in and you're like, hey, I want those 20 bulldozers. Mm-hmm. They're gonna go, why do you need 20 bulldozers?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
How about we give you one? Uh-huh. And then they give you the one bulldozer, and the next month you're like, hey, I want another bulldozer. They're like, we just gave you a bulldozer. We're going to give it to the other guy who hasn't had one yet. So it's not just a complete free-for-all.
Okay, fair.
They're going to restrain you a little bit.
And they created a bunch of new jobs for these people once this legislation went into effect and somebody had to manage all this? Like, who does this? GSA?
Well, see, that's the problem. That's why it's so complicated.
Mm.
Unfunded mandate.
Got it.
The VA certifies it. The GSA runs the website that they already ran. GovX is what municipal and nonprofits use to get access to government property, so it already existed. The federal surplus property positions offices in each state are the ones that get federal surplus property for state agencies and municipalities and nonprofits. So all this already existed. The reason it's such a pain in the ass is that they just forced them to do this with no funding or way to do it set up.
Interesting. Okay. So kind of cart before the horse a little bit.
Yeah.
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 Which sounds typical.
Yep. Oh, no, it's totally typical.
Okay. So I guess if somebody wanted to start pursuing this, what's kind of like, you know, high level, step by step, where do you go?
The first place you're going to go is the VA website. VA. And you type in how to become a certified veteran owned business. And it is going to come up with this thing, and it says click here, and you can just start the process right there. Then you have to get all your stupid numbers, your DUNS number and this number and that cage code. But it tells you where to call and all this other shit. The thing that's disheartening about it is you know that you're not becoming a VA contractor. Mm-hmm. So you're literally doing all this for absolutely no reason except to get that stupid certificate at the end.
Got it.
But you go through and you register with upteen million government agencies, get all your numbers together. A month to 2 months later, you get that certificate from the VA that says you are a certified veteran-owned small business, and you take it to the SBA. They certify it. You call your state, and you get your access, and away you go.
Who do you call at your state? Is it
is going to be your state federal surplus property program, and it is normally run not every state runs it through their state surplus program, but 99% of them do.
Okay.
So if you look up on the computer like Connecticut state surplus property, there'll be a phone number there. You call those guys, say, hey, I need to talk to the federal property people. They'll be like, okay, we'll transfer you. Boom.
Interesting. Okay.
It's just a state employee. It's normally one or two guys that just have a computer in front of them that are like, yeah.
Got it. Yeah. So, you know, you've kind of shined some good light on it. You've shined the good light, but also the realistic light. And like it could be worth it. It's going to take work, like most things that are worthwhile.
Yeah.
Like I just went through this experience of getting my, you know, I took a job that required a license, and I thought it was an apprenticeship, but it wasn't an apprenticeship. So I was like trying to get my OJT. This is, you know, 2 years ago at this point, trying to get my GI Bill rather approved for employment at this place to get my license. And it was the biggest pain in the nuts. It took year. It took about 18 months for final.
Oh, yeah.
So I imagine it'll be a similar cluster.
It'll take you probably three to four months to get it all figured out.
Yeah, that's not terrible. But
the fact is that it is millions and millions of dollars worth of surplus government equipment that can go to vets who can use it to further their small businesses.
It's really good to know. Yeah, it's huge.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
I've got a guy in Alabama who has a construction company that he just started. He was roofing houses like a year and a half ago.
Mm.
He just got all the heavy equipment and tools and pickup trucks and everything else he needs, and he's starting his own general contracting company.
How much of the business has to be veteran owned? Can the veteran own
51%?
They have to have the majority share.
Yep.
Interesting.
But with me, I'm a farm, right?
Yeah.
So that even whacked them out because I used my own name. I just registered myself as my own veteran-owned business.
Interesting. Okay. And you let the license, the certification lapse, you said?
Yeah. I just don't need it right now. And I don't feel like going in and re-registering for my cage code and re-registering this and that and staying on top of all that shit.
Got it. Would it take just as much time to redo it?
Well, I know the process now, so probably not, but it's still going to take me a month.
Okay. This is super fascinating, and I very much look forward to, I'm just going to, you know, start down the process and try to...
Yeah, and, you know, hit me up on social media if you run into a hiccup.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
And it may matter what state you are incorporated in and other things like that, because some states charge a service charge. So they're like, well, we'll charge you $10 for every $1,000 in value.
Got it.
And some states do it free. And some states charge you a flat fee to cover, you know, the cost of them running the program.
Okay. I mean,
so it depends.
you're still getting pennies on the dollar, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're still getting pennies on the dollar, but this weird thing is when you tell vets that something's free, if it's not exactly free, they get a little pissed off.
This is a true statement.
It would be like Applebee's asking them to tip the waitress after they get their free dinner on Veterans Day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. That's too funny. It's
the madness.
Yeah, yeah. The audacity. Do you know what I've done?
It's supposed to be free, damn it.
Yeah.
You can give veterans free shit and then tell them they have to pay a small fee.
Uh-huh. There's war for that.
Yeah, there is. So, yeah, but yeah, let me know.
Yeah, no,
I'd be more than happy to help you through it if you get stuck on it. And if you don't, you know, enjoy 20 Humvees or whatever you're going to park in front yard.
Yeah, I, you know, that's the thing is, what do I need? I don't know. We'll see what's on the list. We'll see.
Just what make sure that you're as general as you can when you file it.
General as I can for my business, like what is my business
exactly? So check this out. I'm a farm, right? I can pretty much ask for anything. I need a Humvee because it's an all-terrain vehicle and I can feed hay to whatever in the winter, or I need this solar system, or I need this pump, or I can pretty much justify everything.
Interesting.
But if you go in there and you're like, I run podcasts, and then you go to the state and you're like, I would love that Bearcat sitting there. They're going to go, I don't know if you need that for your podcast.
So how do you be?
So be smart is what I'm saying.
Yeah. How do you be general and, you know, allow yourself as much opportunity as possible without being deceptive? And do they, you know, like, you know, it's like, all right, so I have a commercial,
it's intention
appraising business.
Yeah,
our primary role is commercial real estate appraising, but I would like to grow it into management and development of real estate. So
okay, so you go in with a management development business where it asks you in that cage code, because there's a code that the government uses to kind of explain what your business is.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate management and whatever.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's what your business is.
Okay. Even though I have not technically developed anything yet, I want to.
It doesn't matter. But the Veterans Small Business Enhancement Act is there to give you the ability to grow your small business. I don't care if you just went and bought the business license yesterday and you haven't done anything yet,
but you got
to
use it.
That's what it's there for, is to help veteran entrepreneurs start new businesses and grow existing ones.
Cool.
The equipment's there. Trust me, government liquidation doesn't need it. We've already paid for it as the taxpayer. There's no reason why veterans shouldn't be able to dip in the same way that, you know, the nonprofits and the churches do. When I found out there were churches getting deuce and a half, so I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
What's deuce and a half? What's
a deuce and a half is the older trucks.
Get
5 tons and deuce and a half before we had the Oshkoshes. I'm just going on age here. It's okay.
Church is getting that. So a church has to go to, any nonprofit has to go through a similar certification process.
The exact same. Well, no, they don't have to go through the VA because none of them would ever make it.
Got it.
But, you know, they have to, as long as they're a certain type of nonprofit, they can take that to their state and away they go.
Interesting.
It's much easier for municipalities and nonprofit businesses than it is for veteran-owned businesses.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
But they work under the same rules. It has to go into use within 6 months, and after 18 months, they own it.
Where was this? Where was all this stuff going before?
So what happens is it goes up on GovAccess, right? And then it used to be that, like, DRMO on post, do you know what that is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Defense Reutilization Marketing Organization.
Yeah.
back in the day, they would have these big auctions and they would just auction it all off. So, you know, that's when you heard about like, oh, I bought a helicopter for $10. Uh-huh. It would happen every so often. So then the internet happened, and then this company called Gov Liquidation came in, and they were like, well, we can do this online and make you 200 times more money if you just transfer the property to us instead of auctioning it. So that's what they do now. They transfer it to Gov Liquidation, and then it goes on the auction block at like online. So instead of like you used to be able to buy the helicopter for $10 because you were the only dumbass that showed up, now there's, you know, 1,200 people on there and it goes for $180,000.
Gosh, I have been on that site before, actually. I remember that. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff on there, but you have people that are paying way, way too much for it. Like, I'm not good. A, I don't need 800 camelbacks.
Yeah.
And B, I've seen the nasty that goes in those. So, no, I'm not going to pay $890 for a pallet of them. It's not happening.
So now these certified veteran-owned businesses get first dibs, basically, before
they get that first site dip.
And gets off.
So the way it works is, it goes up on GovAccess, and you'll see the codes on GovAccess. So there'll be stuff that is still locked up, but you can track it, which is what I do. I'll put a little thing that like, hey, I want to know whether or not this gets grabbed.
Yeah.
So there'll be stuff that's for other government agencies. And once a certain time period expires, then that opens up to us. So the same time it opens to municipalities, nonprofits, it opens to veteran-owned small businesses.
Got it.
And then after that period expires, then they send it off to, you know, Gov Liquidation or auction or local sale.
And they assess the application. So if, you know, 10 different groups, 10 different businesses or municipalities.
They're going to look at who needs it most,
okay,
who can use it most.
Got it. Noted.
Like, let's say that it's a $500,000 excavator, mm-hmm, right? And it needs $100,000 worth of work.
Mm.
So Gary from Ohio says, I'm a vet. I want that. And, you know, some municipality that has three of them already that needs, you know, can raid theirs for parts and get a working one is like, we want it. They're going to give it to that municipality. They're not going to give it to Gary because Gary doesn't have $100,000 to fix the damn thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense.
And they're also going to look at like your track record. So that whole 6 month thing, I'm not saying you can't screw up a couple times.
You can burn a bridge.
But if you have to return that material, the state already has possession of it. They now have to get rid of it. And it may not be something that anybody else wants. Or it may be an excavator that needs $100,000 worth of work done to it.
Yeah. So it's a good opportunity, but don't get carried away.
So it's a good opportunity, but don't get carried away. And don't be that guy that, you know, the problem with this is, and us being vets and this program, is that it is rife for opportunities of fraud, waste, and abuse.
Like most
don't be that guy.
Programs. Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't be that guy. Because like we didn't think it was going to last over a year. But they made it so complicated to get into that the dudes that were going to destroy it for everybody anyway were just like, oh, this is too much trouble.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
It's still there.
Noted. Noted. All right. Good to know. Well, thanks, Bill. Thank you. That's incredible. I'm excited to try this out. Reluctantly excited because I know this the process is gonna be a pain, but yeah.
So like I said, let me know.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'll walk you through.
Awesome.
And you should buy my new book. I'm gonna plug my book on your show now.
Well, I wanted to talk about that because I started to write an outline for a book, about like, you know, kind of making the most out of a military experience, and I started to write it, and I'm like, holy smokes, I've got so much. I give so much credit to anybody who's actually written a book.
Oh, no. Let me stop you. I didn't write them.
Okay.
No, sir. I have a co-author.
Ah, okay. I like it.
So I tell the stories. She puts the words on paper in a form with which people can read it and removes most of the profanity.
I hear you have to cut that out sometimes.
Yeah. So I think in Blood of Patriots, it was 300. I used the F word 384 times, and the book was 300 pages.
Got it. It's a good ratio.
One of the reviewers called it the most beautifully profane thing he'd ever read.
All right. All right. So we have the Blood of Patriots. And I know you also wrote a book on surviving.
I just released a book in November called Survive and Thrive through HarperCollins.
Okay.
How to Make It Through Any Disaster Without Ammo, Camo, or Eating Your Neighbor.
Looking forward to those three.
With climate change and the uptick of disasters going on and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a survival / lifestyle type book that was written for non-insane people.
Mm.
And in the genre, that was desperately needed.
Yeah.
Because most of the books are literally written by batshit crazy people.
Doomsday, be prepared to kill everybody and take everything.
Or put on a backpack and run into the woods.
Yeah.
Why? So you can die? We do not possess the skills anymore to run off in the woods and live off the land. You will die.
Yeah, it's very true.
Stop it.
It's very true.
Most of you will die putting on a 25-pound backpack and trying to walk over 15 miles.
Yeah.
So we talk about gardening and self-sufficiency and, if you live in a place that gets power outages, maybe you should have a generator.
Mm.
Oddly.
So super practical.
Super practical stuff. I mean, we get into hey, this is how you filter water with 3 5-gallon buckets and, some charcoal and gravel.
Okay.
Yeah, so we delve a little deeper into some of the subjects, but a lot of it's just practical knowledge that works whether or not you live in a condo in New York, or you're BFE nowhere New England like I am. The same stuff's gonna work.
Interesting,
but it's more focused to actually things that will happen.
Got it. I like that. I know during COVID. These doomsday preppers were going a little bit crazy, and at times during certain craziness, it's easy to get oh shoot, maybe I need to do this, that, the other thing. But you take all steps back and hopefully your sense is you.
That's what made me write the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I produce my own power. I'm grid connected, but I grow 90% of my own food. I keep my own house. I'm pretty self-sufficient.
Mm.
So, I had this new book where Disney FX bought the rights for Blood of Patriots, and I had all these LA friends, and COVID hit.
Mm.
And they thought that, because I lived in New England on a farm, I must be, the ultimate prepper guy.
Yeah.
So they called me, and I would say I was taking 10 or 15 phone calls a day.
Wow.
Of people in LA completely freaked out, thinking that the end of the world was coming.
Yeah.
And I called up my agent. I'm like, dude, I'm going to write a survival book. And he's like, I don't know. I was like, your wife has called me 15 times in the last month. I'm writing the fucking book. And he was like, oh yeah, good point. So we wrote the book. HarperCollins jumped on it. I'm writing another book right now about gardening.
Cool.
It's funner than writing about terrorism, trust me.
Well, fair. Yeah. I could see that. Do you like the process?
I hate the process. Hate it. But I do get a ton of free crap, which is great.
Yeah.
So Carhartt, North American Rescue, shout out. Love those guys. And I'm making more of a difference in more people's lives now than I was. Going undercover and possibly getting blown up by crazy people that don't know how to handle guns.
So it's fulfilling.
It's fulfilling.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, I'm doing something and it affects people.
Yeah. Where do you have a website where you sell these things, or they're on Amazon, or where can people find them?
The book?
Yeah, your books, yeah.
They're on Amazon, they're at Barnes & Noble, they're at Target, Walmart, like, they're...
Cool.
It's HarperCollins, like...
They put them out.
Yeah, it's not like I self-published.
Okay.
So, they're out there, they're in bookstores and stuff, and cool. You know, if your bookstore doesn't have it, they can order it. It's,
cool.
They're all available. Yeah.
I'm gonna go to Barnes & Noble and go find it on the bookshelf there.
Sweet. You can actually order a signed one through them.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Just any of the New England stores, Portland, you can just ask for a signed copy. They're in their computer system.
Cool. Cool. Noted. Yeah. I am in New England, so noted.
Yeah. Noted. I did a bunch of book signings all up and down a few months ago.
Cool. That's awesome.
So I left like 20 copies and they loaded them all into the system. So they know where the signed copies are.
They're ready. Okay.
Good times.
Good to know. Bill, thank you for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom here. I am 100% going to go through this process and try to figure this out. So thank you. Thank you. And hopefully other people, I'll document my process and see how it goes. And hopefully other people can further benefit from this. But
I hope they can, man. That's why we did it.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm going to include all the links that you've provided for your book, for your social media, so people can, you know, connect with you, learn more about you, and read your books that have won awards. The Blood of Patriots sounds super fascinating. I'm going to check that out.
It was fun to live.
Once. Thanks so much, Bill. We'll talk soon.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Hey, I really hope you enjoyed the episode with Bill. There was a lot of nuggets in there, and just like most other government programs, these things are complex. They're not straightforward, and it's kind of something that everybody, if you're going to pursue, you've got to muddy your way through it. You've got to stick to it, deal with the bureaucracy, and eventually there will be something on the end that makes it all worth it. And so that's something I intend to do as a new owner of a business, and as a veteran, and as somebody who qualifies for this. So I'm going to work on that application, and I'm going to document the process. So if you guys are interested in figuring out how I go about it and kind of what snags I catch, then definitely follow me on my personal Instagram at Jason Birds, and you can follow along, and on YouTube. Hopefully you're there too. But anyways, connect with Bill. His links are in the description for his books, his Instagram, and his website. Hope you guys enjoy. I'll see you guys next time.